Hi, this is Lieutenant Connie Bach. I'm the Combat Systems Officer on USS Roosevelt DDG-80, but I'm here in Evansville, Indiana at the first annual USS Dubuque LPD-8 reunion. And I'm here with one of the older crew members from the ship who traveled here with his wife to be with us. Can you introduce yourself?
My name is Larry E. Davidson. As Petty Officer, Third Class, Electrician's Mate, worked at the E Division, E Gang, and the Engine Room.
Okay, and when were you on Dubuque?
I was on the Dubuque from July 1969 to April 1971.
So that was earlier in the ship's 44-year history, is that right?
Yes.
And that was before she went to Sasebo, so she was still...
She was still out of San Diego.
Still out of San Diego for the first time. Very cool.
37th Pier.
And that was your first ship?
My first deployment, my only deployment.
Okay.
My only ship.
Okay. Did you arrive to Dubuque right after some training or schooling?
A school,
and where was that?
San Diego.
Out in San Diego. So you went from 32nd Street over to the piers?
Yes.
Okay, cool. How many people were in E-Gang while you were there?
12. Two chiefs and petty officers and a couple of enlisted, E3s and below. We all stood watch.
Okay. Where'd you guys stand watch?
Down in the engine rooms. We had two engine rooms, and so therefore we had to have two electricians manning the switchboards at all times.
How was in-port watch standing versus underway watch standing for you?
And Lottie here says that when they hooked the power up from land to the ship, we just shut everything down and just had to watch, make sure that you didn't drop the load. Had to watch your gauges.
And then when you were underway, how was that?
A lot more intense as far as watching your gauges and checking your when it surged, see if it's going to be permanent or not, and if you're going to have to switch from one side to the other. And that was the most difficult thing for me to learn, was how to synchronize switching the engine from one switchboard to the other switchboard. I kind of like to lift it off the deck. A little out of sync.
Okay. How was it for you to come from A school and head to Dubuque? Like, where were you originally from?
I was from Duncan, Oklahoma, Comanche, Oklahoma. For some odd reason, it seemed like Oklahoma has the want to of going to the Navy, going to sea. We're landlocked all over, even though we have a Coast Guard station in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But there's nothing big. As far as that is, and I always wanted to travel. I was free, 21, and ready to leave home.
So you went from a landlocked Tulsa, Oklahoma, to, you said Comanche?
Comanche, Oklahoma,
to the Pacific Ocean.
Yes, I did.
When was the first time you saw the ocean?
Well, I went there in 1965 with my parents. We went from Oklahoma to Los Angeles, had an aunt and uncle there. And I was in the ocean then, and I'd always been interested in the Navy. I met a World War II vet when we lived in Ardmore, Oklahoma. He had his original Blue Jacket manual from 1942.
Oh, wow.
And I just read it from page to page and was just fascinated. And then he still had his uniform with the old style hat, not the Dixie cup, and just always had felt a call to that. I never wanted to be a Marine or in the Army. I was 98-pound weaklings that you saw on the back of comic books. That was me. I never was a strong man, but at least the Navy made a man out of me.
So you left Oklahoma in 68?
In 68.
In 68.
Yep.
And went straight to recruit?
Right. 68, October 68, straight to boot camp. And in boot camp, I got a chance to switch over to the Blue Jackets Choir. And so I went in the Blue Jackets Choir and avoided the gas chamber and firefighting. And so I...
So those are types of training that you would have had to go to.
Had to go through.
Instead you were at a concert or something.
Yes. Every day. At that time, the Navy, of course, as plus money as it was, hired a professor from San Diego University to come up with bass every day and train us and to make us sing. And we sang three, four times a day. We sang it every graduation. I sang it four graduations.
Wow, okay. So were you over at the recruiting station, Liberty Station, then, when that was a recruit training station? Or where did you go to boot camp?
Boot camp was in San Diego.
In San Diego, okay. I think they've since closed that.
Yes, San Diego station, closed, right? Down.
This is the one over in Point Loma?
Yeah.
Okay. I used to live like two blocks away from where that is now. I think it's turned into a place for a bunch of restaurants and grocery stores and a few bars and stuff like that. It's actually a really nice area.
Yeah, they've changed a lot there. Used to, you know, it was a nightmare going downtown on 32nd Street. All the bars and the tattoo places, X-rated movies, and just they had a low life out there and everything, and hippies. Never felt threatened. But, you know, you had to watch yourself, so.
Right.
If you weren't looking for trouble, you could find it real easy.
Yeah, right. Can you tell me some about your first deployment, where you guys went, any missions you specifically remember doing?
Our first deployment was a midshipman cruise. We went up to Seattle, Washington State, for the Sea Festival up there. They had invited us, and it gives midshipmen 3 days at sea there to get up there. And we were there 6 days. And on 6 days, I had 2 days full liberty and got to go around and just had a great time. There's people up there are just like here in Evansville. Everybody wanted to help you, offered direction anywhere to go. And some of them offered me rides.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really liked that. Then after 6 days, we pulled anchor and went to Hawaii, to Pearl Harbor. And we're there 6 days. And at the end of 2 weeks, we went back to San Diego, and the midshipmen went back to the academy, and we went to work. Then around September, we left for Vietnam, and if I can recall, we went straight across to Da Nang and picked up our first load of Marines going back to Okinawa. And went over there and unloaded them, and pick the next load going to Vietnam. And that's basically what I did, just shuttle troops from one place to the other. And as I said, we was partying one way and really unhappy the other way.
How old were you when you picked up those Marines in Da Nang?
I was 20.
You were 20. Did you have an idea or a sense of where you were in the world and why you all were there?
I had a sense of where I was. I was a student of history and knew where it was. In the ocean, but as far as knowing what I was doing, I didn't have a clue. It says that all I'd ever seen was John Wayne, and he was in the movies.
Right. You
know, so that was incentive for me to learn this. We love John Wayne, and also the fact that I didn't have a very strong physical body, and knew I would not pass the Marine Corps with their training or the Army with their training. So I enlisted in the Navy. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I got the only berth in Oklahoma in October for the whole state. And I was in college, flunked out. I had a good time the first year. And when I got home in August from college, two Marines were on my front porch at home and had my draft papers in their hand.
Right.
And so I just smiled and pulled my deferment papers for the Navy, 90-day deferment, and showed it to them, and they went home empty-handed. And I sure glad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably one of the luckiest guys in the world as far as I'm concerned. And then when I got in the Navy, I loved it. Every minute of it, there was, you know, harassment at times. When I went on board, I was a boot, you know, a boot,
right.
Boot. Until you say, oh, you're a boot. And that didn't bother me. One of the cooks was constantly on me about being a boot. But I liked the guy. He was okay. You know, he wasn't being mean.
Yeah.
And as far as my E-gang that I worked with, they were more than willing to train me and help me. Never felt intimidated by asking them to help me to do something. And eventually, you know, worked my way up to PO3, Petty Officer Third Class. Actually, the one that did... gave me that incentive was my division officer, which was a warrant officer for Captain Calfee. Outstanding man. He was a Mustang, Oklahoma. And so I had somebody from Oklahoma on my team right there.
Mm-hmm.
And all. But and he was an honest, goodness officer. Now, he told the line. And I respected him for that. You know, he didn't show any favoritism, and a good guy to work for.
That's awesome. What, how long, can I ask, was your that first deployment that you were out there?
Okay, the first deployment, we was over there a whole year.
A whole year?
Yep.
12 months?
12 months.
Wow, that's much longer than the deployments we have these days. Most of ours are 7 to 9 months mm-hmm. long. I'm not familiar with the feeling of being on deployment for a year.
Oh, well, that says it didn't bother me. I'd get to care less whether I was at home or not. I wasn't attached to anybody as far as there, just my parents and immediate family, and I had found a home.
Did you miss, like, hearing from them? Did you hear from your family very much at
all? Yeah, I got letters fairly regularly at my church. Sent goodie box, you know, and everything. Of course, back then, they sent it, and you got it in 2 months, and so the cookies were a little stale, but it was the thought that counted, you know, the thought that counted. And now my goal is to make sure that the sailors and soldiers in the military get them regularly. I help the Blue Star Mothers through the American Legion send the packages overseas, but we slowed down on that. We were sending 12 at one time. We're not just sending one or two, which I consider a good thing because they're drawing down, and I like to see them come home.
That's great. That's really great. Did you, you said you sort of felt like you had a new family there with A-Gang, or with E-Gang. Can you talk a little bit about just sort of how that feeling develops? Like, how did you get to a place from being a boot to feeling like you could call these guys family?
Well, they stuck me in the engine room and trusted me for a four-hour watch, you know, not to drop the load or anything like that. Never did screw up like that, and I did a good job. The chiefs were, you know, very cooperative as far as my work. Like I said, Mr. Calvary, the only thing he said on my progress report was he wished I would advance rank a little faster. So I got on the ball after that. I made the PO3 real quick, and I passed qualifications for petty officer second class and just waited my time in rank for the 6 months to take a test for it. And just looking forward to that. And I'd found a home.
Can you tell me something or a memory or an experience that you had while you're on Dubuque that you're most proud of from those early years while you were in the service?
I was just a regular sailor. I wasn't looking for awards. I just like to blend in the background and do my job and be left alone. And I was successful at that. I wasn't looking to be Sailor of the Year or anything. But it was just a feeling of brotherhood. You know, there were no questions about what I did back in civilian life or anything like that. I was an electrician and a sailor on the ship, part of the crew. And that stands out more than anything else is what I'm proud of, is the crew I had and the guys I worked with. Of course, you know, you badmouth some of them, but you always have that anywhere you go. And I didn't really have any bad guys in the E-Gang. Some guys acted tough and, you know, could talk to you pretty bad, but never felt intimidated. And in fact, over the whole ship, being an electrician, made I could go anywhere, knock on the door and get in, CIC, or without a security clearance, which I always thought was pretty funny. Because here I was just an E3, E4, and could get into one of the top secret places on the ship without a security clearance. But I had electric tool pouch on my hands, and I had to check out a certain circuit box, and went there and did it. I changed it, everything, changing out the warning lights at the top of the mast. I enjoyed that. Heist never bothered me. I'd climb up there in a heartbeat. That was that day. I wouldn't go there now. At 69, I don't think I'd do it, but I enjoyed it. I didn't have any particular job that I had to do that I didn't like. There were some really nasty jobs, dirty jobs, pulling a motor, rewiring one, stuff that they don't do today. I trained to be a skilled electrician, and I had a future, and they gave me a future, and I was happy with that. When I went to college, I really didn't want to go to college. I was just ducking the draft, like a lot of people. And that don't bother me. If I ducked in the draft for a year, I had a good time in college, but then I had to move on. So I moved on, and I luckily got in the Navy, and just had the best time of my life.
I'd like to ask you about how different or how it feels to be a Navy Vietnam veteran. I know that for me, you know, Operation Enduring Freedom, you know, that experience of being in the Army or the Marine Corps for my peer mm-hmm. group is much different than for me, right? So when I have yeah. friends who have been in the Army or the Navy right. and they talk about, you know, the war on terror, that's a different conversation most of the time than the yeah. conversation that I'm having about the war on terror from a Navy perspective. So can you just talk to me about, like, what is it like to be specifically a Navy Vietnam veteran?
Just to be a Vietnam veteran, period, was to come home unappreciated and ignored, not recognized, not welcomed home by anybody. My parents, I didn't welcome me home. I went to the VFW to have a drink, and when I walked in, then Vietnam hat, that's it. Turned their back on me, every one of them. The American Legion, one of the members there at church one day handed me a card, a membership card. He had paid my first year's membership to the American Legion. Of course, all I knew about the American Legion at that time was they had the social clubs, the Kiwanis, JCs, Lions clubs there for dinner. That was how they made their money. But that's all I knew about the American Legion. The one in Comanche, the only thing I knew about is we danced every Friday and Saturday night there. Great times, great memories. But the one that handed me the membership card to the Legion, I said, what's the catch? Being typical, the sailor that had listened to a recruiter that lied to me, of course. All recruiters lie, and we said. And he said, yes, sure, there's a catch. He said, I want you on my color guard to present colors at the high school football games. Let me tell you, I jumped on that like a June bug. And I've been doing that for 45 years. I missed one home game in 45 years.
Let me just recap that. So you've been on the color guard for the American Legion.
For 45 years.
For 45 years. And which post of the American Legion?
Dobbs Adams American Legion Post 55. They were the first ones that opened up to me, and I stayed loyal to them. And then I figured out about 5 years ago that me not being a member of the VFW was just dumb too, because they're the same guys I was. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced a rewarding time with them now, and I help them out as much as I do with the American Legion.
And that's different, the experience. Totally different.
Totally different, because the VFW is all combat vets. I have a different perspective on their tours and everything. And I respect them a lot. Those guys were in combat boots on the ground. I had boots on the ground, they said, but I was, 300 yards out to sea, ballast down, unloading Marines or loading them up. So that wasn't, combat.
That's probably a good point for us to just kind of talk about how Dubuque is different than a normal, or it has a specific role for combatants. So it's an amphibious ship. So we'll come into close to shore, somewhere between 300 and 500 yards yep. from shore. We'll ballast down and has a big well deck in the stern portion of the ship. Right. And then Marines in there, loaded up in their amphibious assault vehicles, will exit the ship and, quote unquote, swim to shore. And then our ship would stay off the shore while they, did a combat offload or did a combat backload to right. the ship. And then we would kind of go to another location and wait until the signal, right? And then we would come back in to pick them up.
When we dropped anchor 300 yards offshore to offload, the VC would put a rocket on our port side and one on our starboard side. And at the quip, they never probably got a shot. We knew we were zeroed in, but they already knew that they had done 20% damage to the crew by making them scared to death that they're going to put on the ship. And, our efficiency dropped, and they had done their job. Whether they hit us or not, they didn't particularly want to kill us. They just wanted to make us slower in our job and a little less efficient. And they succeeded. Let me tell you, we tightened up real quick when those rockets went to either side of us. That was the only time I was really scared over there because you knew you were zeroed in. And being a kid of the 50s and 60s, you know, watching all the movies and hearing all the stories about mortars and rockets, you know, landing and taking care of killing people and everything, it was stuck in the back of my mind pretty much where I was scared at. Even though I was below deck at my duty station, that it probably would never affected me. I still tightened up. I still scared. And anybody that said he wasn't a liar.
Yeah.
Okay, it says that there's a hero's just an ordinary guy that did something extraordinary at the time
mm-hmm.
that needed to be done. And I did my duty, and I was proud of that. Never have backed off being proud of being a Vietnam veteran. 4 years ago, I was in Walmart, and one of the kids that worked there come up and hugged me. And I said, "What's that for?" And he said, "Welcome home." And I stood in the aisle and cried like a 2-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the first persons in 40-some-odd years that said, "Welcome home." I worked for the post office for 25 years and carrying mail and loved the job, but still never got the closure like that experience of somebody doing that to me. And I didn't know how to react. It was so sudden. But I went home and I put my hat on. I hear a Vietnam veteran. I'd had it for about 8 years, but that was the first time I put it on, about 4. So I've been wearing it ever since, proud of it. But the overwhelming emotional effect of suddenly being recognized was just unbelievable. Emotional-wise for me, it just overwhelmed me and made me so proud and made me so much appreciate those kids that had the decency to say something. You know, the Vietnam veterans, the American Legion, VFW, sure, you know, they thanked us and everything. We all got together for coffee, and it was a liar's club. First one was told a lie, I was not going to have a chance because I get out lied. But it was all in fun, comradeship. We don't judge. When we go in the door to have coffee at the post, either on the American Legion or the VFW, your history stays outside. And all that matters is you're a veteran and qualified. And sure, we're going to make fun of you, we're going to crack jokes, but none of it's vicious or malicious. Are hurtful. It's just in fun. And that's what I've got out of the organizations, the service organizations, and also the ability to help a veteran that's in trouble. I don't do service work as a service officer because I can't leave it at the office. I take it home with me. And then problems start because as emotional as I am, I get wrapped up in the individual and allow the case to take something out of me. And that's not fair to my wife or my kids when they're at home. So they know in Duncan being such a small town of 35,000 people, approximately 35 or 25, know me because I carried mail for 25 years all over Duncan. And I've got third and fourth generation saying, "You were my mailman." I said, "When?" She went, "I was 2 years old," you know, and the kids there got there's a grandmother now. But they know to call me if they need help, and I can direct them to a service officer that can help them. And more we're getting Vietnam veterans calling, number one because of our advanced age, and more problems showing up health-wise that they need help. So we steer them there, and the VFW does a great job of service work. And the American Legion is working on getting another service officer, but them guys are trained real well too, and they know the ins and outs of the system and can help you. If you go out by yourself, you're gonna be lost in a sea of paperwork and being pushed aside by the VA because you're by yourself. And that's where the VFW, American Legion, DAV, Wounded Warriors, all the organizations help out, because they know the system. And if you can't work the system, you can't get your benefits. I have no gripe with the VA. They've been great to me every time I was up there. But I've had friends that's waited 8 years for back surgery, and they're bent double. and World War II vets that, you know, need to be in the home, you know, they can't help. They all have enough room. There's a veterans home in Lawton, Oklahoma, that's run by the state that at one time had a lot of World War II and Korean veterans, and now over half of the patients over there are residents or Vietnam veterans.
I wanted to ask you just quickly here as we sort of wrap up, if you could tell me why you decided to come back for this reunion.
I've been trying to find somebody. I left under unusual circumstances. I attempted suicide, and when I did that, of course, they just rushed me off the ship and over to the hospital in Oak Knoll. I was at Hunters Point, San Francisco. And so I left in a hurry. I didn't get any closure with any of the crew, any explanation why I was gone. I talk about it now. I can talk about it now. But I had PTSD through not any action on the ship, through me volunteering for something that I didn't know what I was volunteering for. And I just wanted to see if any of the guys were here. I listed four or five crew members that were in the E-Gang on the Dubuque website, hoping they'd see it, maybe show up. None of them have that I know of. But I met four, five guys that served on the Dubuque the same time I did, but we were all in different divisions, so we never really developed a relationship until now. Now we're just like brothers. And that's the reason I came up here, because the bond we had on the ship. In the Navy, it's your ship, your shipmates, and then if you were in trouble, it was the Marines and you together working. And the Marines, I can't never say enough about how great they are. Not to take away from the Army, the Air Force, or the Navy, but those are special men. And I have a lot of Marine friends. Not only from my high school that I graduated with, but just meeting them on the street. And I always stop and say hi. I says, I helped deliver you to Okinawa, or unfortunately to Da Nang, and I think the world of you. And then the Navy veterans are pretty tight too. And then we have some Coast Guard veterans, and people kind of make fun of them, you know, because they're Coast Guard. But, I mean, they do a valuable job. And a great job. The coke bus that they make at sea on drugs, Homeland Security that they work with, and they've stepped up and got the attention they finally deserve, as far as I'm concerned. The Navy has revamped. My ship's now obsolete. The Dubuque is. I don't know what they have now to take its place. All I know is the Navy has modernized to the point of I feel that they still can take on anybody in the world and send them home running at sea. I still have enough confidence in this country that we can whoop anybody we want to, if given the chance. If given the chance, we wouldn't have lost Vietnam. Westmoreland, if he had word, we'd have been in Hanoi for about 5 days. But I'm not gonna cry bitter tears over that. I'm just happy to be here today with my shipmates for the last weekend, and have the ability to talk and meet other people that served on the ship that hopefully had the same experience I had comrade-wise. And I've seen that. Of course, being a PO3, I'd never advanced very far in ratings, but I've met a lot of chiefs, officers, and they're just like the regular sailors I was with on the Dubuque at that time in the 60s, 70s. And as I say, loving every minute of it. As I try to stay on the bright side of everything, as I carried mail, my philosophy was if I could leave you feeling better after I went by, I've done my job. I'm a natural volunteer. Like I say, I work at the VFW, American Legion, other organizations. Also volunteered at the local hospital. And that's where I met the first person that had boots on the Dubuque in 50 years. The food service manager is in the Navy Reserve, named Tahia Gonzalez. And she is a reservist, CB, been in the reserve 17 years, working on the last 3 years to retire, counting the days. She got her calendar up. And I heard that she had boots on the ground. She was a resupply officer or with the CBs. She was just resupplying, but she had feet on the boot. As far as I was concerned, she was a shipmate. And she's had that reaction back towards me and everything, and we're close friends now. And just an outstanding young lady. She's told me her age, which shocked me. She's 47, and still just trim as she can be, but she has to be in shape, do the job she's doing. Because CBs, first of all, don't just, you know, sail around. They build things, but they build things under combat situations. So she has to stay in shape, be combat ready. She has 4 kids. She's a grandmother, and she runs a food service at Duncan Regional Hospital, and it's turned the entire cafeteria around as far as people wanting to come in and eat. They want to go back, come into the hospital and eat now. So, of course, she's revamped the entire menu, more healthy, and she makes smart decisions. In fact, I thought she was an officer at first in the Navy. Then I found out she was just an E5 and just blew me away. But I still put her there above me as far as she's doing, because she's so focused. And that's what I like about the new Navy, is they're focused. They know what they're doing. Again, like everybody else, they're going to get orders to say, why? But you don't question, you just go. That's what you signed up for. You don't question, you just go. None of us want to go. I guarantee you, none of us want to go to sea and stay there. But again, we signed up for our duty, and you suck it up and go.
Well, and thank you so much for your time and for... Did you have one parting thought you wanted to add?
One parting thought, I want to thank you for giving a couple of days leave up to come up here with us.
And
even
welcome.
Though you served on a ship, and just as proud as punch to meet you again, somebody that had boots on a ship. Because now you're a member of my family at sea. And just the idea that you would give up 2 days leave, because I know how valuable it is that you and your dad would come up here, just blows me away. And I want to thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And I'm at peace.